Hi there, and welcome back to the Hugo's There podcast. I'm your host, Seth Heasley, and I'm reading the Hugo winners one guest at a time. My guest for this episode is Emily Martin, and we are going to be discussing American Gods by Neil Gaiman, which won the 2002 Hugo Award for Best Novel. So, Emily, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been really excited about getting on here, so I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it was a while back that you reached out and volunteered. Yeah. So, and you were kind enough to mention the podcast and a post that you did for Book Riot, which was cool.
Yes.
So why don't we start talking about you, what should people know about you?
Okay. So I'm a contributing writer for Book Riot. I also have a podcast and a blog. It's Book Squad Goals. And we cover one book a month, and it's not as focused as Hugo's There is. We we cover all sorts of books. There are four different hosts on that podcast, and we all come from different literary backgrounds. Three of us have PhDs in English, and the other one is in the publishing industry. So we all kind of have our own interests, but we read pretty widely. So we read some sci-fi and fantasy. We also read some literary fiction. Sometimes the most recent book we did was like a YA book. So we kind of like read all over the place, but
Yeah. I definitely have a very narrow niche that I inhabit.
That's probably good.
it is. Yeah. I mean, I set myself a project, and it's a very kind of organized project, which is not my typical thing. So it's been good to have that structure. Of course, it also means I can't read as widely as I normally would if I wasn't doing this. So, I mean, you said you read some science fiction and fantasy. Would you consider yourself a science fiction fantasy fan?
Yes. I think, I try to think about the science fiction and fantasy that I have read, and I definitely still have a lot of holes. There are a lot of things that I want to read still. And American Gods was one of those holes for me. So that's why I wanted to read it. I read it for the first time for this podcast.
Nice.
So, yeah. So I feel like people who are listening to this who have maybe read it more than once or are more familiar with it might be like, she is saying some really obvious stuff that I figured out the first time I read it. And I feel like this is one of these books that you probably learn more and more about, or you find more stuff about it the more you read it. But I thought this would be an opportunity for me to cover one of those holes. I also watch a lot of sci-fi fantasy stuff, and I've probably covered my bases more with that. When I was a kid, I watched a lot of Star Trek. So that, I think, was kind of my entry into sci-fi is Next Generation was like my family sat around and watched that. So
Mine did as well. For me, it was when it was in, when it was first on. It wasn't in syndication yet, although I guess it was syndicated from the start. But so I guess you sort of already answered this question, but I always ask it. Why this book?
Yeah. Well, I can say I am a fan of Neil Gaiman, and I've read other Neil Gaiman books. And I used to teach English, and I've taught Neil Gaiman before. So I've taught some of his other books before, but I hadn't read this one. So I'm familiar with his work, and I know that I'm a fan of his work. And this is one of those things that American Gods is a little long.
Yes.
So I thought, unless I'm assigned to do it, I'm probably not going to get to it soon.
Right. Well, I'm happy to assign the reading then.
Yeah.
though, of course, it was your choice.
I assigned it to myself, yes.
Nice.
And you said you read the audiobook for this one, or you listened to the audiobook?
Yeah, I had previously read the book, not long after it came out, actually, because my sister is kind of a big Neil Gaiman fan. And so then at some point when the audiobook was cheap, I picked it up on Audible. So that was a nice way to take it in this time.
I listened to the full cast recording one. I don't know if that's the one you had.
No. Mine was just a single narrator.
So that was interesting.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So how about kind of moving into the non-spoiler discussion? Can you try to give a non-spoiler synopsis of this book? I mean, you have to give away the premise, right?
Yeah. I think the easiest way to talk about this book without spoiling anything would be to say this is a book that's examining America through this war between new gods and old gods.
Right.
And the new gods are sort of like this mixture of things that are like media and television, internet, stuff like that. Old gods, because America is quote unquote a melting pot, they're gods from all over the place that have been brought to America. So it's sort of like American gods versus gods that predate America in a lot of places.
I'd never really thought about which gods the title referred to, or if it was all of them in some way. But
Well, I think it's all of them. But I think there's something that's very American about TV, you know, about like I Love Lucy and stuff like that. That's just like very American, you know. I mean, obviously it's filmed here, but still, like, there's something about television that's just like American.
So how about kind of overall thoughts about the book? What did you think, since you were coming at this from a first-time reader perspective?
Yeah, so I don't know. In a lot of ways, this book has been out for a little while. It's weird because, you know, like, I feel like I remember it coming out and it didn't. I was in high school when this first came out. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll get around to reading that. And now it's like almost 20 years later since it came out or something like that. And I'm just now getting around to reading it. So it's but it's been around for long enough that, like, I think I've heard about it. And so I kind of had a sense of what kind of book it was going to be. So I wasn't, even though, like, I really tried not to, like, read anything about it before I read it, and I haven't seen the television show or anything like that. I was going to ask you if you've seen the show.
I've seen bits of it.
Yeah. Now I'm curious. I'll probably go watch it. But so in a way, I was kind of like, okay, yeah, that's what I was thinking it was going to be. But that doesn't mean that I wasn't surprised by it at all. It's definitely strange. Like, if you tried to step by step take someone through the storyline who hadn't read it, I think they would be like, that sounds like nonsense.
you know? Yeah. Well, if you think about kind of the main narrative of it, it's complicated, but not too difficult to understand. But the way that the book is written is it mixes in all these other stories as well. And so, kind of by way of overall thoughts for me, coming at this for the second time, I guess I enjoyed it the first time. I remember it took me a long time to get through it. I mean, it's not enormous, but it's a long one. And this time I felt like I strongly liked about a third of this book. And it was all the parts that weren't the main plot. The main plot, I think, is perfectly fine. It's interesting. I think there's some pretty clever stuff that happens, especially toward the end. But the parts that I really, really enjoyed were the little vignettes off to the side that would talk about, you know, kind of the origins of how the gods got to the U.S. And, you know, some of the really horrifying stories that there were. And or like, you know, a day in the life of one of the minor deities trying to make it. So, yeah. I'm not sure about the entire book, but there's parts of it that I really, really like. And I really, really like the very, very end of the book. So, like, that's my favorite part, is like the last chapter. And there's parts leading up to that. The lake, what is it, Lake Town? Is that where he goes?
Yeah.
I think it is Lake Town. I like that whole part. And it's weaved throughout it, but it doesn't conclude until late in the book. And I really like that as well.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I always, when I listen to audiobooks, especially audiobooks with multiple narrators, I wonder how much of that is changed by what the narrator does or doesn't do. And those sections, the sections about how the gods came to America, were all narrated by Neil Gaiman in my audiobook. And I think that Neil Gaiman is a very good narrator. He narrates a lot of his own audiobooks. It was sort of like hearing a familiar voice. And so, like, I felt very attached to those parts of the story for that reason also. But yeah.
I lots of times when I see narrated by the author, I think, nope, not going to get that version of it. I was listening to a book recently that was narrated by the author, and it was a good book, and I've seen the guy talking, and I know he's good at that. But in reading his own work, the thing that drove me absolutely crazy was every time he said the word a or a, you know, there's two different ways of saying it, right? A or a, depending on what comes next. I mean, you're into English, I'm sure you're aware of this. But he said a every time, and it just grated on me.
And
it's the same thing when people say the every time. I'm like, or and, you know, say and I when it's almost always and me. But,
I know. Yes.
Yeah. I wasn't an English major. I'm an engineering major, but I'm enough of a word nerd that some of those things can really stick in my craw.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Another thing that I think a lot of authors do when they read their own work is, like, especially if they think their prose is really good, you can hear that in the way that they're reading it. Like, right. It's like, I don't know, like they're trying to give it that like poet sound. And I'm just like, your writing isn't that good. Like, let's not.
You might be too close to this thing.
You might be too in love with your own words. I don't think Neil Gaiman has that problem, though. I think he's very good at reading his own stuff. And I think, I mean, if you go on Audible and look, like, a good majority of his audiobooks are read by him. So,
yeah.
I think he's gotten the hang of it.
Right, yeah. Mine was read by George Godel, and it's really, really good. I mean, he's a pro. He's done hundreds of audiobooks, and he does a really good job with the character differentiation. So, yeah. Well, if you had to recommend this novel, on what basis would you recommend it? Think about comps to the book.
Well, I don't think I personally read anything that's exactly like this. I was thinking, I'm going to say her name wrong. N.K. Jemisin. Is that how you say her name?
Jemisin.
Okay. N.K. Jemisin just came out with a book that I feel like is kind of similar. What is it
called?
The City We Became. That to me seems like it could be similar to this just because it's this idea that the city has spirits that embody the city. And so, and sort of like in this book, the gods that we meet in the book aren't the actual gods. They're like avatars of the gods.
Yeah.
And again, I haven't read this book yet, but it seems like something similar is happening where there are avatars for this, like the spirits of the city.
Yeah. I think for me, I'd say if you're fairly well-read in mythology of various cultures, then, you know, there's a lot of things where you'll pick up on who that story is about or who that person is. And that's kind of fun.
Yes. Yes.
I had a world history teacher who was very into Egyptology in ninth grade. And so we learned all about the Egyptian pantheon, including the god of evil, Seth. it's Set technically, but everybody called me the evil god Set, who of course is a donkey.
Donkey your favorite animal now?
No,
I feel like it needs to be.
Donkeys are adorable, I have to say. So I'm more of a dog person, so
yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think anything, if you're interested in any kind of mythology or gods at all, this is interesting. I think also there's a lot of political stuff happening in this book. And especially reading it right now with the state America is in, it felt very like timely.
Yeah.
So I think if you're interested in fantasy that also is contemporary, because a lot of fantasy is historical, and this is very contemporary and is commenting on contemporary times, obviously.
I think that'll suffice for non-spoilers. You ready to get into the spoiler talk?
Yes.
All right, let's do that. So, you know, whatever you wrote down as notes, we can go off those. I have a few notes as well, but take it wherever you want to take it.
Well, I don't know if this was in, I'm going to keep saying this, I don't know if this was in your audiobook, but it was in mine. Neil Gaiman at the very end talks about the book a little bit, And he says that he was, these are just some of the notes I wrote about it, that he said it, he was trying to write a book about the immigrant experience and what people believe in when they come to America and what happens to the things they believe once they get here. And he was also looking at America as a mythic place. And I think something that's really interesting about this and something he talked about at the end of the audiobook is obviously, well, I don't know if it's obviously, if you're not familiar with Neil Gaiman, he's not from America originally. Right. He did move here, but he is still kind of writing about America and looking at what America is from an outside perspective.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't know what my question is about that, but I just want to reflect on that a little bit. Like, what does America look like to him from an outside perspective? What people believe in when they come to America and what happens to the things they believe? And I think it's pretty obvious he's symbolizing that through gods, but I think there's a lot of stuff. There's so much stuff happening in this book.
Yes.
So I'm like, I don't even know how to begin to tackle that, but I'm just throwing that out there. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I think one of the things that he kind of meditates on in this book is the idea that, you know, America is not somehow some homogenous thing, right? It is very much a melting pot. And people come from so many disparate backgrounds. It's kind of a miracle that the country works as well as it does. Because I guess, you know, some people would say, ideally, everybody comes here and grabs onto, right, American values, regardless of what they come from. But they also bring, you know, I guess you could call it baggage. But in this book, they bring their gods with them. And it's an interesting thought.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too. This kind of like reminded me of Peter Pan, right? Because it, in this imagined scenario, if people stop believing in gods, they die off. Sort of like in Peter Pan, if like you say you don't believe in fairies, fairies die. And so I thought that was kind of interesting. And I guess that's true in America, right? That you know, there, ideally, this is a place where everybody can practice whatever religion they want and bring in whatever gods they want. And the reality of that is a little bit different. And a lot of people's beliefs, religions, whatever, get watered down, for lack of a better term. I don't know.
Yeah. One of the things that I wasn't a huge fan of is one thing that I don't like in books. I don't like dreams as a storytelling device. Just because I tend to think of dreams as like just your brain is randomly firing, and by the time you wake up, your brain has turned it into a story. But on the other hand, if we're going to have a magical universe going on, then I guess I have to be like, okay, it's consistent with the universe that is being shown in this book, that Shadow could have these lucid dreams that give him very specific information. So I have to let it pass, but I still don't love it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of those things where, you know, when somebody tries to tell you about their dream, it's not very interesting. And so reading about a dream isn't that interesting because it does feel kind of random. And like, even in the book, it's like, it serves a purpose, but the way that dreams are just by nature is it feels random.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to attach to that when it feels inconsequential, even when you know it's for some sort of story purpose.
Yeah. So I can comment on the idea of the experience of someone re-experiencing this book. And the first time I read it, I had no idea how Laura came back to life, how Shadow's wife came back to life. I thought, okay, this is random. People are just walking out of graves. And so this time I actually picked up on the fact that it had to do with the coin from the leprechaun.
I'm saying, I just want you to know, I know that, but not because I picked up on it when I read it. I was like reading about it afterwards and I saw someone point that out. So I wasn't like somehow smarter than you the first time I read it or anything. I think that is something that I would have picked up on later, but yeah.
Yeah. I was surprised. I mean, I thought this time, when it showed up in there, I thought, okay, that's pretty obvious. And actually, I have to admit that I only picked up on it toward the end when the, I can't remember what the Irish guy's name was. Whiskey Jack was another guy.
So there are so many characters in this
Is it racist that I associated Irish with whiskey?
No, they'd probably be okay with that. Mad Sweeney.
Mad Sweeney, yes, that is correct.
Yeah.
When he came back looking for the coin and realized that I gave you the wrong coin, that was when I started picking up on it. Okay, there's something special about that coin that he pulled out of nowhere. And so, I wasn't all over it.
Laura was one of my favorite parts. And I think it's because I'm also a really big fan of horror fiction. And so, I love a good zombie. I know she's not like really a zombie, but she is like rotting and dead.
Yes.
So,
but she's not shambling around or anything.
Close enough. You know, yeah. I love a good undead creature in my fiction. So I really appreciated that. And I thought it was an interesting twist. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And she's kind of a badass character too, right? Where she saves Shadow's Bacon at least once. What do you think about, her motivation, right? She's kind of trying to make up for something that she did wrong by protecting him. I wouldn't say that just because, you know, she cheated on him while he was in prison. I think she was set up for that. I think we were led to believe that. But obviously she truly loved Shadow. And so that was really the reason for her looking out for him.
I definitely went through some phases while I was reading this of like how I felt about her and her motivation. And it's complicated. I think the whole like cheating thing is very complicated. Set aside the fact that she was probably like, set up, he was in prison for like several years. Things happen, you know, people aren't perfect. And she clearly feels bad about it. And, I guess I'm just like, I'm kind of wanting to be romantic about this and think that like she did really love him and she murdered people for him. So,
right.
I mean, I did like there when there, she murders for him and he's like, hey, I'm not cool with murdering people. And she's like, well, I'm dead. So I don't really like when you're dead, you don't really like,
right,
care about it anymore. I was like,
yeah,
that's
no big deal.
Cool. Like it's not a big deal anymore. I don't know if that answers your question. I guess I just,
that's okay.
Yeah.
It's just something that I started thinking about, but
yeah, I mean, I do think that it is, some of it is like guilt and wanting to make up for what she did wrong. And I think some of it is like, she just really does want to like look out for him because she cares about him. So that's what I want to believe anyway. So,
yeah,
I don't know how you saw it.
What did you think of Wednesday? I mean, he's obviously a very important character.
I don't think he's a very good guy.
No.
I don't know. Like, are we getting into the ending here or, because
wherever. Yeah.
Okay. Cause we find out that, a lot of this stuff that happened was set up by Wednesday and he kind of put all of the machinations of the plot, basically like he kind of saw coming and this was all set up to create this big war between the new gods and the old gods so that like he could have more power essentially.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's a big tell whenever a character in a novel, their main motivation is power. That like they're up to no good. I mean, he's definitely an interesting character for sure. And just because someone's a bad character doesn't mean that they're not a good character to read about. So,
there's something about grifters in fiction that is very compelling to me, even though I'm just not on board with what they're doing. And in this case, he is, you know, doing literal grifts for money, but he's also doing that even larger one, the trick that he's pulling on people and on all the gods, the new ones and the old ones, in order to get himself power. And it's pretty horrifying, right? Just because you think about all the life that was lost in that conflict. But I do love the way that Laura screws everything up for him.
Yes.
Which is cool.
And I think, you know, you talking about that makes me just think, how many like real world leaders do stuff like this all the time for power. Sure. So I was like, just thinking about, I mean, basic, like, that's, I think, one of the things he's playing with here, or Gaiman's playing with here, is, like, we have these, like, powerful entities that are apparently on opposing sides, but really they're kind of, like, working off of each other and using the little people as pawns so that they can get more power. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's not fantasy. That really happens, I think.
Yeah.
Not to be, like, very negative right now, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, it's so true, just the way the polarization in American politics is to the point that you have people on opposing political sides who think the other side is evil.
Yeah.
And I think, well, that's a pretty good trick when you can get, you know, these people think that all of them are evil and those people think they're all evil and they can't both be.
Right.
So, no, I guess they can, actually. They can both be.
That's the real answer, is that they're all evil.
Right. The only way to win is not to play the game.
Yeah, I was thinking about that a lot when I was reading that, just because, you know, everything going on politically right now is just, like, I was like, this seems like what's happening now in a lot of ways, but just with people instead of gods. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a two-man con of politics.
Yeah.
Yes. I thought there was a fascinating kind of meditation from Odin, who was talking about, like, the tall tales of American folklore, like Paul Bunyan and Pecos Bill and John Henry, you know, those kind of pseudo-mythical figures in American lore, like pulled belief away from actual gods from the old countries. And that was fascinating. I'd be curious if in an adaptation you would bring in some of those as, you know, if belief creates the god, then it seems like there should be a Paul Bunyan around, maybe. Although maybe people just don't believe in that because it's a tall tale.
Yeah. Now, does belief create a god or does belief sustain the god?
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the story in Lake Town, it kind of does go into the origin, right? Where that entity came from. That, like I said, that's, to me, the most compelling story in the book. And so I like all the parts where Shadow is in Lake Town, partially because I'm from Alaska. And so I can always get really into a story in a place that's very cold. It's an Alaskan thing.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I was born in Louisiana. So, but I don't particularly like stories about heat. I also would prefer to be in the cold weather. So I think I was just born in the wrong place, but yeah.
Yeah, that happens.
So one of the things I like to do after I read a book is I like to go online and find all of the negative things people are saying about it, because I find that reviews that are negative give me a lot more to think about than the positive reviews. It's easy for me to think about, like, oh, this is what I liked about a book, but I think it's more interesting to think about, like, okay, what are some of the things that people are saying about this book that or it's not working for them. And so I wrote down some of the things that multiple people said. So that made me think, like, maybe there was something to that and maybe we could talk about whether we agree with that or not.
Sure. I like it.
So I'll start with the big one first. One of the premises that is pretty central to this is old god versus new gods. And we haven't really talked very much about the new gods yet.
Right.
I thought media was very interesting because I love the idea of communicating to someone through television characters.
Right.
But anyway, the negative criticism about the new gods was basically that this idea that technology and television and the internet and everything is bad might be a little oversimplified, but, like, I don't know. My response to that, I don't think necessarily that this book is trying to say the new gods are bad.
No, I don't think so.
But a lot of people were getting that from this. So
no, I don't see that the book takes a stand one way or another on if any of the gods are good or bad.
Right.
You know, in objective terms.
Right. I think we see that throughout the book because we see characters talking about that. Like, how do you know you're on the right side? and arguing for the different sides. It's, again, it's sort of like two political parties, right? Where like both sides think they're the right side. So yeah, I didn't know how I felt about that. I saw one person say that they thought this book was very anti-millennial, which I thought was interesting.
I could get behind that, but I'm old enough that I have to be anti-millennial.
Are you Gen X?
I am, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm a millennial, so I got to go to bat for the millennials. Well,
I make exceptions.
Yeah, I guess the idea was that sort of like to say that if you believe that this book is saying that the old gods are inherently better and the new gods are bad, then you're kind of saying that the things that millennials value are bad, was their argument. But again, I think to believe that, you would have to think that this book is saying that the new gods are bad, which I think.
Yeah, you'd have to essentially think that this was a form of a conservative argument that, the way we used to do things was better. You know, back when everyone was still honoring the gods and stuff, that was when America was great, if you want to put that kind of phrase on it.
Right.
Of course, I don't think people who would say make America great again would say that old pagan gods being worshipped would have been
that. I don't think Wednesday's the answer for them.
No. Well, the other thing that, so I wanted to mention this, you know, I grew up in a very conservative Christian home. I'm still a Christian, but I remember like at youth camp, the preachers there talking about, you know, the idols of television and the idols of popular music and that kind of stuff. And talking about, you know, basically anything that you dwell on too much becomes your kind of personal idol, and idolatry, of course, in the Bible is a terrible thing. So that this book reminds me of some of that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think any of these gods could be a negative idol.
Yeah.
Something bad to fixate on.
Right.
So the next big criticism I saw, this is kind of like a two-parter, was the characters. Somebody actually said, I watched a YouTube video and they said that Neil Gaiman can't write characters. So there were two things that I saw about the characters. A lot of people said that they thought Shadow was a really flat character. And the other argument I saw was that the women characters were not very fleshed out. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
I mean, Shadow is kind of a flat character, but I feel like that's his character. And and it was deliberate. He had to be this very kind of just go along kind of person. Otherwise he never would have fallen in with Wednesday.
Right. He kind of at the beginning is like, well, I drank the mead, so now I have to just do my thing. Yeah.
Well, to the point that, you know, he comes back to Chernobog at the end and says, well, you can knock my brain out now.
I know we've talked about Lara, and I feel like the way we've talked about her makes it seem like she's not a flat character, probably.
Right.
How do you feel about the other women characters in this?
Are there other women characters in this? That I mean, is like, a question. I mean, I know that there's the...
If goddesses are women, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's the one who's definitely like the sacred feminine, right? And that's... It's quite an interesting introduction to the book, starting with that pretty early in there.
Where
she is conducting her rituals as a prostitute, essentially.
There's a lot of sex in this book. There's a lot of sex.
Yeah. There is.
I was like, wow. Dwell on that. No, we don't. I was just like, this is going to be weird to talk about.
Yeah. And that, you know, that stuff is in the series. I've seen three or four episodes of it. It didn't grab me all that much. And I think a criticism that I heard of the series was that the guy who plays Shadow is just very not quite there. I feel like, well, that's his character though.
Right. How would you play him differently? I don't know.
If you adapted him into someone more dynamic, I'm not sure that you'd believe that he would have been falling in with Odin.
His name is Shadow. If you think about it, I mean, he's a shadow. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is just, I think sometimes this is just something that happens in books where the main character just has to be just for the sake of the story, the main character has to be someone who just has things happen to them.
Yeah.
And the interesting characters are sort of everyone that's around them. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if some of that has to do with the fact that, you know, as readers, we want to put ourselves in the story, and it's easier to do that if we have a main character who's pretty like an anybody character. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. The women characters, I can see that argument a little bit.
Sure.
Just because I think, you know, besides Lara, all of the other women or goddesses we meet seem sort of one note, like they're this type. But I don't on the other hand, like maybe that's true of all of the gods. So
was the personification of the media god always a woman? Because at some point it was
Lucy, right? Yeah, it was Lucy, and then another time it was the cast of Cheers. So I guess in that case was some guys in there.
Hmm.
But I think she's referred to as she, right?
Yeah.
So
I don't know. That's fascinating to me. Yeah. I mean, do you think of men being more addicted to television or women? I mean, if it's football, obviously.
Right. My husband's watching football right now. yeah, I think it depends on the TV, really. Yeah. But I mean, like, I don't know. I grew up in a house where my dad watched a lot of TV. So I think of like, I talk about television with my dad all the time because he watches all these TV shows and he's always telling me about what he's watching. My mom doesn't really. But I think, yeah, it just kind of depends. I don't think of television as like inherently male or female. I think there's so much TV out there. There's TV for everybody at this point. Like, no matter what you're interested in, there's a television show for you. So I don't know. We need to actually, you know, because this book came out in 2001, we need to update the new gods with all the technology that we've come up with since then. Like, we don't have a god of DVR. We need the god of DVR. Right.
Social media.
Yeah. We need an iPhone god, clearly. So,
yes. Yeah. Or at least an Apple god.
So. Yeah, definitely. I think Apple would be like the king of the new gods at this point, honestly.
Probably.
But yeah.
Yeah.
That was mostly it for the negative feedback. It was like talking about flat characters, and there were some people who said it was like too much sex. I think you're always going to have that when there's a lot of sex in a book, but I don't know. Yeah. I just find that interesting to read the negative criticism, especially because after reading this book, and I have to sit for it for a while because I read it recently, and I think it takes me a little while after I've read a book to really like decide how much I liked it or didn't like it. I'm still in that I'm thinking about it phase. So I don't know, I just find it helpful to see what other people aren't liking about it so I can see if I can agree or not.
Yeah. And that's the way it often works with me, where I'm still working through it by the time I end up recording. And usually kind of having the conversation helps me.
Absolutely.
Think, you know, it bouncing ideas off another person is always helpful.
Yeah. I usually end up liking books more after I get to talk about them because I haven't had a chance, you know, like talking aloud. Oftentimes you actually think through things and you're like, oh, I didn't even know I thought that until I said it. So.
Right. Yeah. 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 I've found that even books on the list that haven't hit me in, lived up to the reputation of books, like a book like Neuromancer was one that, you know, is a classic. And I was like, sorry, I'm with you
on that one. I thought it was kind of boring. Yeah. Sorry, everybody.
But it was a fun discussion that we had on the podcast. it always raises the book a little bit in my estimation to hear somebody else who's passionate about it.
Yeah. So I feel like something else that's happening in this that we haven't talked about yet is he's definitely saying something about America and race. We have Shadow is sort of throughout the novel, people are like, what is he? You know? I think that's very pointed. And then we also have this hitchhiker character who's Native American at one point.
Sam, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a really important part of the American story, especially if we're looking at gods, is Native American traditions, which I think, obviously there's a really violent history in America with Native Americans. So I feel like this book was kind of touching on that without, I don't know, making it too preachy or anything like that, but still kind of saying like race is an issue in America. And it's something that like we haven't really confronted completely as a country yet.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, certainly in 2001, 2002, when this came out, that was more the case. I feel like now it's a little harder to not think about those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, as somebody, as a person of faith and somebody who grew up churched, a book that that features Jesus as one of the small g gods in the book, that's always going to turn off some percentage of the evangelical Christian crowd. But I feel like if there was going to be a Jesus in this, there should also be like a black Jesus, because there's a very different experience of the American church for white people and black people. And kind of throughout history, it's been kind of segregated. And and even like the Bible teaching is markedly different in those churches. The book that I was listening to recently was all about, it was from a Christian author about the church's complicity in racism. And so really challenging one for a person of faith and a good one for these days. So,
yeah, I mean, I think, obviously that's a thought that I had when looking at Jesus. That's the thought I had when reading that is, the book is that it's surprising that Jesus doesn't factor into the story more, because you think of America as a pretty Christian country. And so I feel like that was a very conscious choice that the author's making. There is an entirely, not entirely different, but there could be a different version of this book where that's explored more. And I think you're right. I think there are, even within the Christian faith, within like white Christian communities and black Christian communities, there are different versions of Jesus. we could have like 15 different Jesuses.
There's like an old Christmas song called Some Children See Him. And it starts off, some children see him lily white. And then it goes through all these other children picture Jesus the way they look, right? Part of that also is because the popular images of Jesus that have come down in the white evangelical church as blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus, which is not at all accurate, I'm sure.
Right. And I think just circling back to the race thing with Shadow, if we're looking at the way that this book is dealing with how America as a country takes in a lot of things from other countries. It kind of makes sense that the main character of the story would be sort of ambiguous racially, where people don't really know how to place him. When I first started reading this, I don't know why I thought maybe he was Native American. Obviously, like it gets cleared up as you're reading it. But I don't like maybe the name sounded maybe slightly Native American. I don't know, but
sure.
I think that's a really conscious choice to point out over and over again, like that. I don't know, like he's definitely not just like white or just black. He's
right.
He could be representative of all Americans, maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's why he has to be so boring. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. But we also didn't talk about, Wednesday Odin. We did talk about the fact that he's not a good guy. He's a grifter. The way he treats women in the book is horrifying. He's always using young women. Right. And he uses some kind of magic to essentially, he's a rapist. There's no other way to say it.
Which, a lot of gods are rapists. If you look you look through mythology, there are a lot of them out there. So,
Zeus got around. So,
Yes. But yeah, were you getting to the fact that he's Shadow's father?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that I picked that up the first time I read it either. Even though I think it's pretty explicit.
Yeah. I think I got that this time. Maybe it was one of those things where you picked it up, but it wasn't important enough in the story that you remembered it, you know, when you were looking back at it.
Yeah, could be.
But yeah, I think it's it's just all a part of his plot to control everything. It's to like also have a son that he can control, basically. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting choice in the book to draw a line under the fact that, you know, Odin Wednesday in the book is not the Odin, right? He's just, like you said, an avatar.
Right.
And so then Shadow, when he goes over to Europe, he meets another version of Odin there.
Mm-hmm.
So like you could play out all the events in different countries.
Yeah.
Maybe he was talking about there's something unique about the way people have brought their cultures into America.
Yeah. I was just wondering, like, does that mean that they're, for like every single country in the world, there is an Odin, or just in countries that believe in him? Or
yeah, I think that would have to be it, right? Where there'd have to be people who, I mean, like if you look at the history of colonialism, right? There's I can't remember what the country is in Africa where they speak German because it was a German colony, and there's Mozambique was a Portuguese colony, and then other ones were English and French, right? And so in those places you would have some of that as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. That concept is hard to wrap my head around, just like practically how that would work, you know. It's better to just think about it like theoretically and not just like thinking about all the little like Odin pins on the map that are like all over the place.
Right.
Yeah. It starts getting a little weird.
It seems like one of the technology gods would have tracked all the places that Odin had hotspots, you know?
Yeah.
And then target those for figuring out how to stop him being remembered. Right. Because that's what kills them, right? When they're no longer remembered, no longer worshipped. Or if they get run over by a car, evidently.
Right. Yeah. But then, see, I have questions, and I'm like, well, if your avatar gets run over by a car, can you just, like, pop a new avatar, like, there?
Or? Yeah, I don't know. And that's where it's like you're applying science fiction fan logic to a fantasy book.
Yes. I know. I have that problem sometimes with fantasy where I just like, I have questions.
I do too.
I'm like, I want to know how everything works. And that's not really the point of fantasy all the time. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, and it's easy to go too far in that direction as well, where all you're explaining is the nuts and bolts of the magic system or something.
Yeah. So it's just best. So I'm just going to go back to what I said a couple of minutes ago and say, it's best not to think about it too hard. Because then it just, the magic is gone, and you're like, it gets confusing and doesn't really work as well if you think about it too much. So,
And then, you know, you can focus on, well, what's the book trying to say? And we've talked about a couple possibilities. I'm not sure that we're right on any of them, but that's what's fun about literature, right?
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's just one British guy's opinion about America, basically, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just his opinion of what America is. And I think, you know, one of the things he mentioned at the end of the book was that when he finally did get to America, it was different than what he thought it was going to be. So then you wonder, is this book more of like what he thought America was or what he thinks America is? I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, certainly. Because I don't think like he lives in LA or New York City either. I think, doesn't he live in like Minnesota or something?
Yeah. His wife is American, I think.
Okay.
He lives in Wisconsin. So okay. Just very, very just America.
Yeah. Middle America kind of.
So yeah.
Yeah. Well, final thoughts about this book.
I don't think I have final thoughts yet. I think This is one of those books that I'm going to be thinking about for a little while. And I guess that's my fault. Maybe I should have read this a month in advance so I could have some final thoughts on it. I don't know.
I'm not sure I have final thoughts on it either. So
yeah, it definitely gives me some things to think about. It wasn't I think, you know, a lot of people, before I read this, I know a lot of people just love this book, loved it. And I didn't come away from it thinking like, oh my gosh, I loved that. But it definitely gave me some things to think about. And I'm glad that I took the time to read it. I'm glad I assigned this to myself. So. Yes.
Hey, you assigned it to me too. So
yeah, I hope you're glad. Well, you were going to read it eventually, right?
Yeah. I'm going to have to do all of them at some point. But
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely one that I'll think about for some time. And like you said, right. I mean, it's kind of, maybe it's unfortunate because I know, I covered a previous Neil Gaiman book, with M. Barger, and she's a huge Neil Gaiman fan. And she said she would have squeed all over this one. So, I'm sorry. Didn't like it as much as you do. but opinions vary on things.
Yeah. And you know, like, I think, like I was saying, like, I think sometimes it can be more interesting to hear the negative things than it is just to hear someone be positive about a book all the time. So hopefully we were interesting to the listeners. I hope you found this interesting. Yeah.
All right. So then before we sign off, where can people find you?
You can read my articles at Book Riot, bookriot.com. Book Squad Goals is at booksquadgoals.com. So pretty easy to remember both ways. So Book Squad Goals, there is a blog and a podcast. So check that out. Yeah, that's me.
Yes.
Thank you so much books for having movies. Me. Yes, books and movies. We do a lot of movies too. So, yeah.
Well, cool. Thank you so much for joining me. And thank you for reaching out and being patient in the months that it took for me to get to you.
Look, no, that was good because it gave me time to mentally prepare to read. Mm-hmm. And I know this isn't like the longest. I have read books longer than this. I'm making it seem like this is the longest book ever. But, you know, like it was long. So it was good to have the time. So I really appreciate you having me on. I'm so glad that we got to do this.
Yeah.
All right.
It's my pleasure. All right, cool. Thanks again, and I'm sure we'll talk again sometime.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Yeah. Okay, bye. Well, everybody, I hope you enjoyed that discussion with Emily, and I encourage you to check out Book Squad Goals and Emily's writing at Book Riot as well. She did a nice post that I mentioned a while back where she was talking about science fiction podcasts, and she mentioned this podcast and Spectology as well as several others, so... Maybe I'll put a link to that one in the show notes as well as Emily's other contact information. Of course, if you're enjoying this podcast, I also want to encourage you to support the podcast in whatever way you can. Retweet the podcasts, tell your friends about it. If you want to guest on the show for a regular topic or for comfort reads, go ahead and shoot me an email, feedback@hugospodcast.com, or fill out the contact form on hugospodcast.com. And you can tweet at me, of course, @hugospodcast. And if you'd like to support the show financially, you can go to patreon.com/hugospodcast and sign up there for as little as $1 a month. And that gives you access to patron exclusive content that I'm beginning to do. I've only done a couple so far, but I'm working on others. But as always, thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye. The theme music for the Hugo's There podcast was composed and performed by Tim Kuske.